of Acts, chapter 17. Tonight's message is probably going to be lengthy as well. I figure this is the first time we've had back in the building in a while, so might as well stay in it for a while. But Acts chapter 17, read verses 22 through 30. Then Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill and said, "You men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you're too superstitious." Then he states his reason. "For as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with the inscription to the unknown God, whom therefore ye ignorantly worship. Him declare I unto you. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move, have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone, graven by art and man's device. In the times of this ignorance God winked at, but now commandeth all men everywhere to repent." What we read here, of course, is Paul preaching at a place called Mars Hill. He's preaching to the educated. He's preaching to the Athenians. And we see from the text that they were very steeped in superstition. They're very steeped in religion. There's a lot that can be preached from this passage. But I want to focus tonight on verse 26. We'll look at some other verses, but this is our main point. "And hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." Amen. What we read here has reference to the creation of the human race. I want you to notice, "and hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on the face of the earth." Now pay real close attention to what is said there. Notice all nations, plural, of men, plural. The Greek word for nations is ethnos. It's our word ethnicity. The implication here is a diversity. God created a diversity, a variety, differing types. It is all nations, plurality. All nations of men, another plurality. In the context of this plurality, notice the words one blood. Two pluralities. And now we come to the word one, which of course is a single entity. Put it together. One blood, all nations of men. That's what you have there. One blood, all nations of men. So what we see here is a diversity brought down to one. It is a diversity with a common ancestry. We read in verse 29, he just kind of states it in a different way in verse 29. He says, we, plural, referring back to the nations, the ethnicities, we are the, that's a definitive, offspring of God. We, the ethnicities, the nations, are the offspring of God. So let's put that together. One blood, all nations of men, the offspring of God. That's what we have here. So again, pay attention to that. What you have there is a diversity that is unified in God. You have your diversity, but we are the offspring of God. So this diversity is unified in God. Because of that reality, people from every race, ethnicity, are ultimately extended family. All spring from God. The diversity of humanity is reflective of God's creativity. It's like in the plant world, all of creation. It just reflects the creativity of God, the diversity that we see in creation. And we see that diversity in the human race. So what we have here in verse 26 is God created the human race, singular. And within that human race, there is a diversity of races or ethnicities. And then again, notice in verse 26, for to dwell. You have all these ethnicities. They're one blood. They all spring from God. And they are to dwell on all the face of the earth. So, one race, the human race, in that one race you have many ethnicities, and they're all to live together, dwell upon this earth. That's what we have. Hopefully everybody can see that. I think it's pretty plain. So as you read on in verse 26, you see that God is the determiner of where these who make up the human race, all these ethnicities, are to dwell. God's the determiner of that. If someone that's Japanese moves next door to you, that's of God. That's of God. God's the one who determines where all these ethnicities are to live. I've heard people say God meant for each ethnicity to stay in the place. Well, you show me that in Scripture. I don't believe you can. I can show you the opposite. So what we have here is the subject of racial relations. You need to hear this, and you need to hear it well, clearly. You did not choose your race. You did not choose your skin color. God chose it for you. Other people, they didn't choose their race. Their ethnicity. God chose it for them. So when I see a person of another race or ethnicity, Here's how I'm to think. We are the offspring of God. Are you more of the offspring of God than them? No. We are the offspring of God. And God chose what race I would be. And God chose what race they would be. And if you have a problem with that, you have a problem with God. It's not a problem with race. You have a God problem. I'm sure you've probably figured it out by now, but we're going to speak upon the issue of racial relationship. I would ask you, when was the last time, you don't hear much, not in our kind of churches, on the subject of racial relationships. But just hearing those words, some, I'm talking generally, perhaps here, I don't know, immediately feel an uneasiness and discomfort. It's an issue. And I'll stop there. It is an issue. It's an issue that most do not want to have an honest conversation about. And those who make up the diversity of the human race almost all have an opinion upon the subject. Yet it is a subject that makes many extremely uncomfortable. Let's say you pick any race in your mind, it doesn't matter. And they say to you, I want to have a discussion with you on race. Most people are going to feel uncomfortable. You shouldn't, but most will. So again, it's a subject that immediately puts some people on the defensive. It's a subject that angers people. Some people can't talk about the subject without getting angry. Again, the subject is the issue of racial relations. It's not a subject that is preached upon very often. And I believe there's several reasons, but I'm not going to make accusations. But one of the reasons is discomfort, an uneasiness that is going to be stirred by the subject. It is a subject that is guaranteed to offend some. It is a subject that is guaranteed to anger some. It shouldn't. It shouldn't offend you. It shouldn't anger you. It's a very sensitive subject. Doesn't have to be, but it is. It's a subject that, especially in the times in which we live, needs to be handled with great care. So how do you do that? You handle it biblically. That's how you handle it. You handle it biblically, you have no problem. So I want to say this. The issue of racial relations and harmony is not inclusive of any particular ethnicity. It's a human race issue. So let's consider, first of all, and I think this clears up a lot of problems, the foundation of the issue. And we're going to spend some time on this, but the foundation of the issue. What is the emphasis of the issue? In our text, in verse 23, there's an issue or a problem. It has nothing to do with race, but there's an issue, there's a problem. And you see what that is in verse 23. They have this altar. The inscription is to the unknown God. And they ignorantly worship that altar. That's the issue that Paul is dealing with. How does he begin dealing with the issue? Verse 23, him declare I unto you. He begins with God. Him declare I unto you. The you is the ones with the problem. And it is him unto you. And then in verse 24, he continues, God. That's the him that he referred to earlier. God. So Paul is addressing this particular problem. And where does he put the emphasis? God. That's where the emphasis is. He goes on to say, you read about halfway down in verse 24, he, referring back to God, God referring back to him, I declare unto you, he, and then he proceeds to declare God's position in relation to the problem that he was addressing. He is the Lord of heaven and earth. So, where is Paul placing the emphasis? He's placing the emphasis upon God. Don't lose sight of that. Start with God. That's always true. Start with God. That principle is established in the first four words of the Bible. In the beginning, God. That is an exhaustive statement. It is a foundational statement. It is a vital statement. In the beginning, God. Those words give us a blueprint for living life. And when you lose sight of the blueprint or ignore the blueprint, you've got a mess. In the beginning, God. That is a statement about the purpose and the meaning of life. And when you lose sight of the purpose and meaning, you have what? Chaos. You have chaos. In the beginning, God. It is a very fundamental truth. Now in Genesis 1:1, it relates to creation, but I believe that statement is more far-reaching than creation. I believe it's, again, it's the opening statement of the Bible, and it's everything. In the beginning, God. It has a truth that has bearing on living our life. In the beginning, God. It's fundamental, it's essential to living right. It is fundamental, it is essential to handling all the issues of life regardless of the issue. In the beginning, God. Start with God. It is first God. First God. Luke chapter 9, verses 59 through 62, it's brought out clearly. We'll not turn there, but Jesus said, follow me. And one said to him, let me first go bury my father. And another answered, said, let me first bid them farewell at home. You have a problem here. The problem was there was a wrong emphasis. Christ was to be first. But they were putting other things first. You had a wrong starting point. First God. We can't lose sight of that. First God. First statement of the Bible. And everything that follows comes back to that. First God. It does not begin, the Bible does not begin with the seen, it begins with the unseen. It does not begin with the physical, it begins with the spiritual. It does not begin with the passing, it begins with the permanent. There's a valuable lesson here. This is a foundational truth. It does not begin with, again, the temporal, but the spiritual. It doesn't begin with us. It begins with God. And if we're going to live above this world, you better know where to begin. And we begin with God. Therefore, there are other things, of course, in life. There are other matters in life. But first, God. This has to be our starting point. And when God is your starting point, then everything you do in life in some way relates to Him. Whatever you do, if whatever your starting point is, what you do from that point relates to your starting point. So if our starting point is God, then everything we do is going to somehow come back to God. This is true, again, no matter the time, the place, the circumstance, the condition, first God. That has to be the foundational principle. In the beginning, God. God, the most ultimate, central, foundational reality that exists is God. He's absolute. Everything else is derivative from Him, dependent upon Him. He's the most important. And this is where we begin. We have to start with God. Now, we're going to speak on race, but I want to tell you that this is so with all the issues and all the problems of life. Don't start with the issue. Don't start with the problem. Start with God and work your way to the issue and the problem. What I'm saying is you don't start with your feelings. You start with God. Because if you start with your feelings are the emphasis, your feelings are the main thing. God is the main thing. Start with God. I'm not saying deny your feelings. I'm saying start with God, work toward your feelings. Makes a huge difference. Start with God. And if you don't start with God, what happens is you create more problems or you worsen your current problems. Start with God. You extract any scenario, any issue, any problem from God, and you create another set of problems. Start with God. With that principle in mind, consider the issue of racial relations. Start with God. Genesis 1, verses 26 through 28, in relation to the creation of man. Notice the emphasis is God. Verse 24, and God said. Verse 27, so God created. Verse 28, and God blessed them. He's talking about the creation of the human race. One can say, and they would be correct, that the creation of man in those in Genesis 1, 26 through 28 is the subject matter being addressed. That is so. But in addressing the subject matter, where's the emphasis? God. There's the emphasis. In our text in Acts 17, notice verse 28. For in Him, where's the emphasis? Him. We, that is the ethnicities of the human race, live and move and have our being. In Him, the emphasis, the starting point is God. We cannot stress that enough. Start with God. Start biblically. And work down from there. Don't start with your problem and eventually get to God. That's backwards. Start with God, get to the problem. Or the issue, whatever it is we're talking about. So regarding the matter of racial relations, don't start with race. Start with God. Don't start with ethnic backgrounds. Start with God. Don't start with ethnic culture. Start with God. Makes a huge difference. When it comes to racial relations, far too many are trying to dissect the issue color and culture wise rather than biblically and spiritually. I'm not saying there are not issues of color or ethnicity or culture. There are issues, but the emphasis is to be God. Start with God. No matter who is looking at who, don't start with color. Listen to, I will say most, who are so-called, want racial unity. Where do they start? Color. That's where they start. You've started wrong. You've started wrong. You don't start with color. You start with God. If you start with color, you might have a problem. You start with God. We're all the offspring of God. You start there. You don't start with color. And I have some difficulty with people that and you may disagree, but I have difficulty with starting with color. I'm an Oriental Baptist or whatever. Why do you start there? Start with God. Start with God. Is it I'm a Hispanic Christian or I'm a Jewish? We won't use that because that's religious and ethnic. Puerto Rican, Filipino, Christian. Why can't you just say I'm a Christian? You start with race, you start with color, you've started in the wrong place. And I believe problems are going to result from that. When the emphasis is misplaced, emphasis is important. You can be talking about any subject, and we can have five people talking about the same subject and five different points of emphasis. We have to have the same emphasis. God. Start with God. You start with God, here's what you start with. Created in the image of God. Don't start with color. You look at somebody of a different color. You look at somebody of a different ethnicity. You start with this. Created in the image of God. You won't have a problem. But you start with color or you start with ethnicity, you're going down the wrong road. You're going to have a problem. What happens is the problem is exasperated. Again, you can talk to almost anyone about racial relationship, harmony, and almost all start with race. They start with race, and I believe they begin in the wrong place. I'm not saying they do it on purpose. I don't know their hearts, but I am saying they contribute to the problem when you start in the wrong spot. Again, verse 25 of our text, it says, He, where's the emphasis? He giveth to all ethnicities. life and breath and all things. Speaking of ethnicity, but the emphasis is not the ethnicity. The emphasis is God. Ask yourself this question. You see somebody that's a different ethnicity. You see somebody that's a different color. What's your first thought? The ethnicity, the color, or created in the image of God? Where do you begin? Where do you begin? Just a question. And notice verse 27, that they, the various races and ethnicities, should seek the Lord. Again, where's the emphasis? The Lord. Why should they seek the Lord? Because he's the emphasis. Notice verse 29. For as much then as we, the various races and ethnicities, are the offspring of God, and then notice, we ought. Starts with God, says we are the offspring of God. Knowing we are the offspring of God, we ought. So now there's a behavior based upon being the offspring of God. Now I realize that's not the issue that's being discussed here. We ought not to think. He is saying, you start with God, and it affects your thinking. You start with color, you start with ethnicity, your thought process goes an entirely different way. You start with God, you have a different thought process. I'm telling you, this is crucial. Start with God. A thought pattern is being developed with our starting point. We are the offspring of God. That develops a thought pattern. So here am I, in my light-colored skin. Over here is a black man. Over here is an Oriental man. And over there is an Hispanic man. But all the offspring of God. Now there are people who even have trouble with that. Well, I'm not so sure they're the offspring of God. You've got problems. You've got deep, deep problems. The offspring of God. The emphasis is not the skin color. The emphasis is God. And that is what is to influence my thoughts if I look at someone who is of a different color than myself. I'm to begin with God. That's where I'm to begin. And therefore, since we're all the offspring of God, what conclusion do you come to from that? Every person's life has value. Why? Because they're offspring of God. Their life doesn't have value because they're black or because they're white or whatever. Their life has value because they are the offspring of God. Matters where you start. Matters where you start. Because they're the offspring of God, they have value. Their life has value. Their life has a God-centered purpose. Their life has meaning. Why does it have meaning? It has nothing to do with their skin color. It has meaning because of its connection with God. That's why human life has meaning. Because God created it. A person's skin shade should in no way invoke any sort of prejudice or racist comments. None. All races, All ethnicities are descendants of Adam and then Noah. Because of that reality, people from every race and ethnicity are, again, ultimately extended family. Someone says, well, I don't look at it that way. Well, you've got a problem. How can you all be of the same offspring and not be family? Diversity of humanity, again, is reflective of God's creativity. But skin color should not influence, or ethnicity should not influence what I think of a person. My daughter-in-law, who is Jewish, ethnic-wise, not religiously, her ethnicity is no barrier to my love for her. My son-in-law is black. His skin color is no barrier to my love for him. None. Has nothing to do with it. None whatsoever. So we've established a foundation. We have to start with God. And I challenge you, wherever you stand on race, start with God. It'll change the way you view it. So let's look at the problem involved with races. The issue of race and ethnicity relations have been and continues to be muddied and exasperated by millions of voices. The issue of racial relations, racial problems, is history long. It's history long. It's a global problem. I think with regard to the problem of race relations, we need to understand some terms that are closely and separately connected to the issue. Terms that I believe are thrown together, misconstrued, misapplied often. Prejudice. Prejudice is an opinion or decision of mind formed without due examination of facts. It is a bent or bias of mind against a person or thing, a preconceived judgment or opinion without just grounds or sufficient knowledge. In other words, it is a previous bent or bias of mind without basis. Without basis. For example, you see a person, let's say of Eastern descent, and you immediately assume, you just see that person, you just walk by each other, that's a Muslim. Well, Muslims are religions, but you've made that assumption. That's prejudice. And then perhaps you go from there, I bet he's a terrorist. You have no fact to base that on. That's prejudice. Or a policeman shoots and kills someone, and you, without any thought, assume that the one who was killed deserved to be killed. Well, you don't know that. Or you assume that the policeman had every right to shoot that person. Maybe they didn't. But you just assume that without any thoughts. I've heard people say, well, I'm going to stand with the police no matter what. Well, that's prejudice. Or another person says, I'm going to stand with this race no matter what. That's prejudice. What do you base that on? You started with color. You started with ethnicity. And you've gone wrong. Then there's bigotry, which really takes prejudice just a step further. It's a further level. It's a higher degree of prejudice. It's an intolerance of the person or thing that is different. It is blind or obstinate attachment to a particular group, ideology, or people. is basically the mindset of don't confuse me with the facts. This is the way I think. This is the way I was raised. This is the way I was brought up. I don't want to hear the facts. That's bigotry. In its worst form, it becomes discriminatory. Discriminatory behavior that is mean-spirited. We are a nation and society sinking further and further into the abyss of bigotry. And I'm talking all kinds of bigotry. Bigotry has all different kinds of targets. Then there's racism. That's a term that's thrown around today. It's constant. And that, of course, is even a more severe mindset than prejudice or bigotry. Racism begins with a feeling of superiority. It's attributing to one race intrinsic superiority, valuing that race above another race, and treating others as undesirable, unworthy because of their ethnicity or their skin color. It is an attempt to keep people down based upon race. The term racism is really a relatively modern concept. It comes from European imperialism. The ruling class would suppress the lower class based upon the belief we are superior just because of who we are. They are inferior. We, the superior, have the right to dominate the inferior. That is really the true meaning of racism. It begins with a superiority. I'm better than you because my skin is such and such a color. Superiority. The idea, I don't know how many of you, it's been a while, but I don't know how many of you have read anything about Hitler. Hitler, of course, racist. There's no getting around it. It came from social Darwinism, which really has its basis, of course, in evolution. The conclusion of social Darwinism is that evolution has left some races superior and others inferior. The theory of evolution feeds racism. It really does. People decry racism and they insist on evolution. Evolution feeds racism. Again, social Darwinism. It feeds it. Why does it feed it? Because it doesn't start with God. It doesn't start with God. It removes God. Evolution removes God as the foundation or the starting point. Now, racism. This may upset some, but racism was the major driving force behind racial segregation in the United States. And in South Africa, apartheid. Again, through the years, the definition of racism has grown and has shifted over time. But I'll just put it this way. If you think that someone is inferior to you because of where they come from or because of their skin color, that's racist thinking. There's no getting around it. That is racist thinking. Now, we can debate if you can think like a racist and not be a racist. I think you can. But that's racist thinking. Because I'm white or because I'm black, because of that, I'm better than you. That's racist thinking.
There's a problem with that.
Again, the problem is you've begun with skin color. You've started wrong. So prejudice, bigotry, racism, multifaceted, multi-leveled. History-long problems, massive global problems, bloody problem. And it's not merely a black and white problem. You take the Armenian genocide in Turkey in 1915. Take the Holocaust in Germany. Who knows how many tens of millions in the Soviet Union under Stalin? Probably more than Hitler. You take the slaughter of Rwanda in 1994. You take the Japanese slaughter of Chinese and the Indonesians and the Koreans and the Filipinos. It's not just a black and white problem. There is a litany of history, long history of long bigotry and racism in the name of ethnicity. But the problem is not race. That's not the problem. We're all born in sin. We all know that. You will never convince me that someone is born hating another person because of their skin color. They're not born that way. Or hating another person because of their background. Or hating another person because of their religion. A Baptist baby that comes in the world is not born hating Catholics. If they hate Catholics, they were taught that. So we're not born hating someone because of their skin color. So race itself is not the problem. But from society, we are racially programmed. We are racially programmed. Not all in the same way. We have race problems, no question. But race is not the problem. It's a sin problem. A person's skin, shade, again, in no way should invoke any sort of prejudice, bigotry, or racism, or any sort of ill will or negative feelings or thoughts just because they have a different skin color. It's a sin. Mark Twain wrote a book in 1869 entitled "Travel is Fatal to Prejudice and Bigotry." I read it in college. The premise of the book is when you introduce yourself to and get to know people that are different than you, it becomes difficult to be prejudiced and bigoted. There's a lot of truth to that. What the moral of the story is, reach out to someone of different ethnicity. Reach out to someone of different color than yourself. We as God's people should rise above it all. I was going to read these verses, but we'll just refer to them. Time's getting away. Matthew 22, verses 36 through 40. The man asked Christ, which is the greatest commandment? He said, love God. That's the first commandment. The second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Doesn't say love your white neighbor, love your black neighbor, or whatever. Love your neighbor as yourself. And everything else in life proceeds from this, from these things. Love God, you love man. You love man. Where does it start? We begin and get back to our point. You start with God. Philippians 2, verses 3 through 5. I realize it's talking about church relationships, but there's a wider application. We're to think others better than ourselves. When was the last time we looked at someone of different ethnicity or different color and said, you know what, they're better than I am? Again, racism has its basis in superiority. The Bible addresses the racial issue. Romans 10, verses 12 and 13. We read, there is no difference between the Jew and the Greek. Two different ethnicities. Widely different. Here's why there's no difference. For the same Lord. For the same Lord. There's your foundation. For the same Lord over all. What's the all referring to? Ethnicities. Is rich unto all. What's the all referring to? Ethnicities. That call upon him. For whosoever. What's the context? Jew or Greek? The context is ethnicity. All these people that want to use whosoever to support their Arminian doctrine. The context of whosoever is ethnicity. In other words, it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. It doesn't matter what your skin color is. If you're going to be saved, you got to call on the Lord. Colossians 3, let's turn there. Colossians 3. And I got a long ways to go. Colossians 3, verse 11. For there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond or free, but Christ is all and in all. The emphasis is Christ. The emphasis is not the ethnicity. The emphasis is Christ. And the problem of the ethnicity goes away. So I'll close with Christ's example concerning the racial issue. Here's how I got thinking on this whole subject. Someone asked me, what's going on today? If Christ were here, what do you think he would do? And that's what's got me thinking upon this. Concerning the race issue, as in all issues, Christ is our example. In Mark 11, 17, Jesus said, my house shall be called of all nations, ethnicities, the house of prayer. Of all nations. He didn't exclude. No exclusion based upon race or ethnicity. Luke 17, 16, concerning Christ's healing of 10 lepers. Remember that 9 went their way, 1 returned. Concerning that one that returned, we read that he fell down on his face at his feet, that is Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. And then it says, and he was a Samaritan. And he was a Samaritan. Great racial divide between Samaritans and Jews. And he was a Samaritan. But Jesus healed him. We have the example of Christ dealing with the Samaritan woman. John 4. Preached many messages from John chapter 4. We see Jesus going through Samaria on purpose. And with a purpose. To deal with a Samaritan woman. Going through Samaria was the shortest route, but it was not the common route. The reason being is because the Orthodox Jew looked at the Samaritans as unclean dogs. By way of background, when Assyria invaded Israel, they took many of the Jews back to Assyria. They also hand-planted some Assyrians in Israel. The result was marriages between Assyrians and Jews, which brought about this new group of people, Samaritans, who were absolutely despised by the Jews. So much so that they had no dealings with them. And we learned that from John 4. In verse 5, Jesus arrives in a city of Samaria which is called Sychar. And he is there for a certain woman of Samaria. In verse 6, we're told that Jacob's well was there. Jacob's well was there. Jesus sat upon that well. Why does it specifically mention Jacob's well was there? Why doesn't it just say there was a well there? And Jesus sat on the well. The fact that the Spirit of God moved John to record Jacob's well has to mean something. Again, the context is Jesus, a Jew, is there to meet a Samaritan. The Jews did not get along with the Samaritans. They hated the Samaritans, and vice versa. The Samaritans didn't get along with the Jews, and they hated the Jews. But neither one of them had a problem with Jacob. They both identified with Jacob. Jesus went to Jacob's well. He would meet this Samaritan woman on common ground. That's where he'd meet her. I believe this is significant. People say, well, we don't have anything in common with that race. The offspring of God. You have that in common. Created in the image of God. Don't say, we can't meet on common ground. We have no common ground. You begin with God, you have common ground. So Jesus met this Samaritan on common ground. She comes to the well. He asks her for a drink of water. A Jew asking a Samaritan for some water from her cup. Verse 9, this is absolutely shocking to this Samaritan woman. She could tell he was a Jew. She could tell that by the way he dressed. She could tell that by his speech. And you read verse 7, but I paraphrase, she says, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. You're going to put your Jewish lips on my Samaritan cup? I don't think so. You've got to be kidding me. He was a Jew. She was a Samaritan. Jesus did not stop being what he was to reach the Samaritan. He did not stop being a Jew to reach a Samaritan. He was visibly, he was verbally a Jew. And he did not give that up to speak, to reach a different ethnicity. God, we said early on in the message, you didn't choose your ethnicity. God chose it. God chose it for you. You didn't choose your skin color. God chose it. God does not expect you to give up your ethnicity. That's how he created you. And you shouldn't expect anyone to give up their ethnicity. God doesn't expect you to give up your skin color. Jesus didn't stop being a Jew. She didn't stop being a Samaritan. So they both maintained their God-given racial identity. But I say he maintained it, but I also want to say this. He did not let being a Jew get in the way of dealing with a Samaritan. He's there to do the work of the Father. So he didn't let ethnicity get in the way. God help us if we ever let ethnicity get in the way of talking to somebody about Christ. That is sin. I don't care what excuse you use. That is sin. That's wicked. That's vile. You don't let your race get in the way of telling someone about the Lord. Well, I don't have anything common with them. One of their own kind need to deal with them. Come on.
That's not what it's about. You have a lot in common. You have the same offspring. Right. Start with God.
And that problem goes away. God's not calling us to give up what he made us. We're not to use it how he made us against someone who's different. Jesus asked her for a drink of water. The lesson is that don't let the fact that, again, all the Jews had problem with the Samaritans and vice versa. Don't let the fact that others of your ethnicity won't drink from her cup. That doesn't mean you shouldn't. Don't be so committed to your race that you operate outside of what God would have you to do. So he says, "Can I have a drink of water?" She's overwhelmed. Why is she overwhelmed? Why is she so shocked? Because he's doing something that his people do not usually do. He's doing something that a Jew does not normally do. In verse 10, Jesus transitions to the spiritual. In verse 19, she transitions from the fact of thou being a Jew to he's now a prophet. Verse 20, she speaks of the fact that they are from different cultural backgrounds concerning the worship of God. She says, our fathers taught us that we're to worship in this mountain, Mount Gerizim. Your fathers taught you to worship in the temple. So she's bringing up a difference in their cultural backgrounds. But it's in the context of worship now. Jesus has not said anything about her race. When she said, thou being a Jew, he didn't come back and say, thou being a Samaritan. He didn't respond. But when she brings her cultural background into worship, now Jesus responds. And you know the story. And we'll not get caught up there, but the teaching is that spiritual truth dominates sociology, if you will. He tells her basically that race and cultural background is not the standard of worship. Someone of a different ethnicity, you're talking to them and they say, well, we worship this way. Well, you need to say something. Because now you've entered into spiritual ground, spiritual territory. So there's a lesson here. People tend to reach back into their ethnic histories to legitimize who they are today. And that's what she did. But our standard is to be God. As you read on in the account, the Samaritan woman is saved. She goes into the city. She says, come see a man. Verse 30, in the meantime, the disciples return. And I believe what you read there in verses 34 through 38 were spoken as these Samaritans are coming. Jesus says, look up, behold, the fields are white, the harvest. And I believe as they looked up to see, here were coming these Samaritans. They were coming. In verse 40, Jesus not only spoke to this Samaritan woman, but it says, well, let me read it. I need to get in the right book here. John chapter 4, verse 40. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them. And he abode 2 days. He went and lived with them for 2 days. Jew and Samaritan. So we have to ask, do you have a problem spending time with someone? Let's say 2 days, simply because they're different. Because they're a different ethnicity? Because they're a different skin color? Is that a problem? Shouldn't be. It won't be if you begin with God. And I want to close in Galatians 2. Galatians 2. Galatians chapter 2. Notice verse 11. Paul's speaking. He says, but when Peter was come to Antioch, he said, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. He says, I rebuked Peter. Verse 12 and 13 tell us why. What he rebuked him for. You remember Peter, back in Acts 10, was called to go to the Gentiles. And you remember the story. Basically, Peter found out that he could have bacon with his eggs, if you will. You know, it's okay, Peter, to eat this pork. And I believe Peter got where he kind of liked that pork chop and bacon. And he ate with the Gentiles. Verse 12, for before that certain came from James, he, Peter, did eat with the Gentiles. Didn't have a problem. But when they were come, these that came from James, he withdrew and separated himself. Why? Fearing them which were of the circumcision. So there he is. He's sitting at the table eating with the Gentiles. Some of his Jewish friends come in. He immediately feels uncomfortable because he knows they don't approve of me eating with these Gentiles. So he gets up and he leaves the Gentiles. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him. So there were other Jews there as well. Insomuch, this is like, this can't hardly believe that, even Barnabas was carried away with their dissimulation. This is what Paul rebuked Peter for. He's eating there at the Gentiles. He has no problem. Some people of his own race come in, and all of a sudden he's embarrassed for eating with the Gentiles. There's nothing right about that. You may have a friend that doesn't like a certain ethnicity, and you happen to be with that ethnicity, and your friend comes in and you feel ashamed. Well, you're wrong. You're wrong. And that's what Paul rebuked Peter for. But it hit me. I've preached on Galatians 2:20 so many times, and it's in the context of this. It's one of my favorite verses. But here's part of his rebuke. He said, I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. He basically told Peter, Peter, you're an embarrassment to the gospel. And in verse 20, he is saying, you have taken on the wrong identity. Your identity is not a Jew. Your identity is Christ. Your identity is not your race. Your identity is not your culture. Your identity is not your class. It's not your history. Your identity is Christ. Which brings us right back to start with God. You and I that are saved, our identity is Christ. My identity is not that I am a white male. The identity of a Japanese person who's been saved, their identity is not Japanese, their identity is Christ. And whatever color skin you want to put in there, it applies. It's a matter of emphasis. It's a matter of where we begin. The Lord saves a black man or a Filipino, saved them the same way saved me. And now are we not only from the same offspring of God, we've experienced the same new birth as well. And their skin color has not a thing to do with it, nor did mine. So you identify with Christ, and ethnic barriers are removed. Begin there. And ethnic barriers are removed. I've seen it. I've been pastoring a while now. I've seen. I've got eyes. I've got ears. I can see things. I can hear things. And throughout my ministry, I've seen people get uncomfortable because a different ethnicity walks in the building. That's wrong. Don't try to defend it. It's wrong. You ought to pray the Lord saves them. If they're saved, you ought to rejoice. It's wrong. Nothing right about it. People will say, well, I believe that the Japanese should have their churches and the blacks should have their churches and the whites have their churches. Show me that in Scripture. The Ephesian church, Gentile Jewish, he hath broken down the middle wall between us, Paul said. The Colossian church, we see that they had several different ethnicities in Colossians chapter 3. You can't, that might be your opinion, but it's not biblically based. And if it's not biblically based, you probably need to change your, no problems about it, you need to change your opinion. Well, I'm just uncomfortable with it. Well, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be. And it works on all races. I'm not just talking about you and I. All races. If I walk into a black church, I ought to be welcomed. If I walk into a Filipino church, I ought to be welcomed. If I'm the only one there of my ethnicity, I ought to be welcomed. Same here. Same here. Their skin color is not going to rub off on you. Don't worry about it. I have heard, my daughter has pointed out posts to me on Facebook of the racial comments, thinking. I've had people say things to me. I had one man come up to me at a conference and he said, "Brother, I'm praying for you." I said, "Well, I appreciate that." I said, "What are you praying about?" "Well, it's got to be awfully hard." I said, "Well, you can stop praying about that. I don't have a problem with it." People say some really horrible things. People in the Lord's churches. It's not right. I bite my tongue. Just about bite it off sometimes. It's not right. And I can overlook it just as ignorance, but when somebody starts to defend it, now we've got a real problem. There's nothing right about it. Nothing right about me thinking that I'm better than someone else because of their skin color. Because of where they come from. We need to pray for God's help. I think all races need to pray for God's help. All ethnicities. And if we're going to deal with this issue, then you got to start with gut. And I believe if you start there, you won't have a problem. You won't have a problem. God help us to love people that are different. My father instilled in me that if he ever saw me making fun of a handicapped person, he'd beat me to death. And I believed him. And I don't ever remember ever making fun of a handicapped person. But then it was just the opposite on race. It's not right. It's not right. God help us. Again, it's preached a long time. I'll feel better. You might not, but I do. But it is a biblical issue. When I was in Chicago area, we had two black ladies that were church members. Good church members. Learned the doctrine of grace, learned local church truth. This is back in the early 80s. And I remember it well. Preachers on more than one occasion came to me and said, I hear you've got some black church members. Yep. Brother, better be careful. You'll have a church full of them pretty soon. I said, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. There's something wrong with that kind of thinking. They started with race and not God. It had an effect upon me, really did. At first, I lost respect for those men that said that, but that wasn't the case any longer. I just chalked it up to ignorance. God help us. That we would never mistreat or prejudge anyone because of where they're from. I mean, somebody can come from the worst neighborhood. You should pray for them. They've got a soul. They've got a soul. No, it's late. Let's look to the Lord in word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we do thank you.